Chapter 73. Samuel Weller makes a pilgrimage to Dorking, and beholds his mother-in-law, there still remaining an interval of 2 days before the time agreed upon for the departure of the Pickwickians to Dingley Dell. Mr. Weller sat himself down in a back room at the George and Vulture, after eating an early dinner, to muse on the best way of disposing of his time. It was a remarkably fine day, and he had not turned the matter over in his mind 10 minutes, when he was suddenly stricken filial and affectionate, and it occurred to him so strongly that he ought to go down and see his father and pay his duty to his mother-in-law, that he was lost in astonishment at his own remissness in never thinking of this moral obligation before. Anxious to atone for his past neglect without another hour's delay, he straightway walked upstairs to Mr. Pickwick, and requested leave of absence for this laudable purpose. "Certainly, Sam, certainly," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, his eyes glistening with delight at this manifestation of filial feeling on the part of his attendant. "Certainly, Sam," apostrophe, Mr. Weller made a grateful bow. "I am very glad to see that you have so high a sense of your duties as a son, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "I always had, sir," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. "That's a very gratifying reflection, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick approvingly. "Worry, sir," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. "If ever I wanted anything o' my father, I always asked for it in a very respectful and obliging manner. If he didn't give it me, I took it, for fear I should be led to do anything wrong, through not having it. I saved him a world o' trouble this way, sir." Apostrophe, "That's not precisely what I meant, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, shaking his head, with a slight smile. "All good feeling, sir, the worry best intentions. As the gentleman said when he run away from his wife 'cause she seemed unhappy with him," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. "You may go, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Thank ye, sir," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, and having made his best bow, and put on his best clothes, Sam planted himself on the top of the Arundel coach, and journeyed on to Dorking. The Marquis of Granby, in Mrs. Weller's time, was quite a model of a roadside public house of the better class, just large enough to be convenient, and small enough to be snug. On the opposite side of the road, was a large signboard on a high post, representing the head and shoulders of a gentleman with an apoplectic countenance, in a red coat with deep blue facings, and a touch of the same blue over his three-cornered hat, for a sky. Over that again were a pair of flags. Beneath the last button of his coat were a couple of cannon, and the whole formed an expressive and undoubted likeness of the Marquis of Granby of glorious memory. The bar window displayed a choice collection of geranium plants, and a well-dusted row of spirit phials. The open shutters bore a variety of golden inscriptions, eulogistic of good beds and neat wines, and the choice group of countrymen and hostlers lounging about the stable door and horse trough afforded presumptive proof of the excellent quality of the ale and spirits which were sold within. Sam Weller paused, when he dismounted from the coach, to note all these little indications of a thriving business, with the eye of an experienced traveler, and having done so, stepped in at once, highly satisfied with everything he had observed. "Now then," apostrophe apostrophe said a shrill female voice the instant Sam thrust his head in at the door, "what do you want, young man?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Sam looked round in the direction whence the voice proceeded. It came from a rather stout lady of comfortable appearance, who was seated beside the fireplace in the bar, blowing the fire to make the kettle boil for tea. She was not alone, for on the other side of the fireplace, sitting bolt upright in a high back chair, was a man in threadbare black clothes, with a back almost as long and stiff as that of the chair itself, who caught Sam's most particular and especial attention at once. He was a prim-faced, red-nosed man, with a long, thin countenance, and a semi-rattlesnake sort of eye, rather sharp, but decidedly bad. He wore very short trousers and black cotton stockings, which, like the rest of his apparel, were particularly rusty. His looks were starched, but his white neckerchief was not, and its long limp end straggled over his closely buttoned waistcoat in a very uncouth and unpicturesque fashion. A pair of old, worn, beaver gloves, a broad-brimmed hat, and a faded green umbrella, with plenty of whalebone sticking through the bottom, as if to counterbalance the want of a handle at the top, lay on the chair beside him, and, being disposed in a very tidy and careful manner, seemed to imply that the red-nosed man, whoever he was, had no intention of going away in a hurry. To do the red-nosed man justice, he would have been very far from wise if he had entertained any such intention. For, to judge from all appearances, he must have been possessed of a most desirable circle of acquaintance, if he could have reasonably expected to be more comfortable anywhere else. The fire was blazing brightly under the influence of the bellows, and the kettle was singing gaily under the influence of both. A small tray of tea things was arranged on the table, a plate of hot buttered toast was gently simmering before the fire, and the red-nosed man himself was busily engaged in converting a large slice of bread into the same agreeable edible, through the instrumentality of a long brass toasting fork. Beside him stood a glass of reeking hot pineapple rum and water, with a slice of lemon in it. And every time the red-nosed man stopped to bring the round of toast to his eye, with the view of ascertaining how it got on, he imbibed a drop or two of the hot pineapple rum and water, and smiled upon the rather stout lady, as she blew the fire. Sam was so lost in the contemplation of this comfortable scene, that he suffered the first inquiry of the rather stout lady to pass unheeded. It was not until it had been twice repeated, each time in a shriller tone, that he became conscious of the impropriety of his behavior. "Governor in?" inquired Sam, in reply to the question. "No, he isn't," replied Mrs. Weller, for the rather stout lady was no other than the quondam relict and sole executrix of the dead and gone Mr. Clark. "No, he isn't, and I don't expect him either. I suppose he's driving up today?" said Sam. "He may be, or he may not," replied Mrs. Weller, buttering the round of toast which the red-nosed man had just finished. "I don't know, and, what's more, I don't care. Ask a blessin', Mr. Stiggins." The red-nosed man did as he was desired, and instantly commenced on the toast with fierce voracity. The appearance of the red-nosed man had induced Sam, at first sight, to more than half suspect that he was the deputy shepherd, of whom his estimable parent had spoken. The moment he saw him eat, all doubt on the subject was removed, and he perceived at once that, if he purposed to take up his temporary quarters where he was, he must make his footing good without delay. He therefore commenced proceedings by putting his arm over the half door of the bar, coolly unbolting it, and leisurely walking in. "Mother-in-law," said Sam, "how are you?" "Why, I do believe he is a Weller," said Mrs. W., raising her eyes to Sam's face, with no very gratified expression of countenance. "I rather think he is," said the imperturbable Sam, "and I hope this here reverend gentleman'll excuse me saying that I wish I was the Weller as owns you, mother-in-law." This was a double-barreled compliment. It implied that Mrs. Weller was a most agreeable female, and also that Mr. Stiggins had a clerical appearance. It made a visible impression at once, and Sam followed up his advantage by kissing his mother-in-law. "Get along with you," said Mrs. Weller, pushing him away. "For shame, young man," said the gentleman with the red nose. "No offense, sir, no offense," replied Sam. "You're worry right, though. It ain't the right sort o' thing, when mother's in-law's young and good-looking, is it, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's all vanity, apostrophe, said Mr. Stiggins. Ah, so it is, apostrophe, said Mrs. Weller, setting her cap to rights. Sam thought it was too, but he held his peace. The deputy shepherd seemed by no means best pleased with Sam's arrival, and when the first effervescence of the compliment had subsided, even Mrs. Weller looked as if she could have spared him without the smallest inconvenience. However, there he was, and as he couldn't be decently turned out, they all three sat down to tea. And how's father? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam. At this inquiry, Mrs. Weller raised her hands, and turned up her eyes, as if the subject were too painful to be alluded to. Mr. Stiggins groaned. What's the matter with that ear, gentleman? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Sam. He's shocked at the way your father goes on in, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Weller. Oh, he is he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam. And with too good reason, apostrophe, added Mrs. Weller gravely. Mr. Stiggins took up a fresh piece of toast, and groaned heavily. He is a dreadful reprobate, apostrophe, said Mrs. Weller. A man of wrath, apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Stiggins. He took a large semicircular bite out of the toast, and groaned again. Sam felt very strongly disposed to give the Reverend Mr. Stiggins something to groan for, but he repressed his inclination, and merely asked, what's the old un up to now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, up to, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Weller, oh, he has a hard heart. Night after night does this excellent man don't frown, Mr. Stiggins. I will say you are an excellent man. Come and sit here, for hours together, and it has not the least effect upon him. Apostrophe, well, that is odd, apostrophe, said Sam. It does have a worry considerable effect upon me, if I was in his place, I know that. Apostrophe, the fact is, my young friend, apostrophe, said Mr. Stiggins solemnly, he has an obdurate bosom. Oh, my young friend, who else could have resisted the pleading of 16 of our fairest sisters, and withstood their exhortations, to subscribe to our noble society for providing the infant Negroes in the West Indies with flannel waistcoats and moral pocket handkerchiefs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what's a moral pocket handkercher? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam, I never see one o' them articles o' furniture. Apostrophe, those which combine amusement with instruction, my young friend, apostrophe, replied Mr. Stiggins, blending select tales with woodcuts. Apostrophe, oh, I know, apostrophe, said Sam, them as hangs up in the linen drapers' shops, with beggars' petitions and all that ear upon them. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Stiggins began a third round of toast, and nodded assent. And he wouldn't be persuaded by the ladies, wouldn't he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam. Sat and smoked his pipe, and said the infant Negroes were what did he say the infant Negroes were? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Weller. Little humbugs, apostrophe, replied Mr. Stiggins, deeply affected. Said the infant Negroes were little humbugs, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Weller. And they both groaned at the atrocious conduct of the elder Mr. Weller. A great many more iniquities of a similar nature might have been disclosed, only the toast being all eaten, the tea having got very weak, and Sam holding out no indications of meaning to go, Mr. Stiggins suddenly recollected that he had a most pressing appointment with the shepherd, and took himself off accordingly. The tea things had been scarcely put away, and the hearth swept up, when the London coach deposited Mr. Weller, Sr., at the door, his legs deposited him in the bar, and his eyes showed him his son. What, Sammy? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the father. What, old Nobs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ejaculated the son. And they shook hands heartily. Worry glad to see you, Sammy, apostrophe, said the elder Mr. Weller, though how you've managed to get over your mother-in-law is a mystery to me. I only wish you'd write me out the receipt, that's all. Apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam, she's at home, old feller. Apostrophe she ain't with an earin. Apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. She always goes and blows up downstairs for a couple of hours arter tea. So we'll just give ourselves a damp, Sammy. Apostrophe, saying this, Mr. Weller mixed two glasses of spirits and water, and produced a couple of pipes. The father and son sitting down opposite each other, Sam on one side of the fire, in the high back chair, and Mr. Weller, Sr., on the other, in an easy ditto, they proceeded to enjoy themselves with all due gravity. Anybody been here, Sammy? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Mr. Weller, Sr., dryly, after a long silence. Sam nodded an expressive assent. Red-nosed chap? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Mr. Weller. Sam nodded again. Amiable man that ear, Sammy, apostrophe said Mr. Weller, smoking violently. Seems so, apostrophe observed Sam. Good hand at accounts, apostrophe said Mr. Weller. Is he? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam. Borrows 18 pence on Monday, and comes on Tuesday for a shillin', to make it up half a crown, calls again on Wednesday for another half crown to make it 5 shillings, and goes on, doubling, till he gets it up to a 5-pound note in no time, like them sums in the arithmetic book out the nails in the horse's shoes, Sammy. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.